Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. It is great being with you again, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Civil Defense Radio. Our guest this week is an old friend of Civil Defense Radio, Command Sergeant Major Michael Mabey, U.S. Army retired. In fact, it was in a discussion with Michael that the idea of this very podcast was discussed. Michael has not only been a warrior in the military, but also in a fight to better secure our national power grid. His deep research and analysis of the grid, its threats, and who is doing what to weaken our security is epic. There should be a special kind of award for the work that he has done. So it is with great honor that we welcome back to the show our friend, Michael Mabey. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, it's great to be back, Preston. Always an honor to be on your very, very important show.
Thank you. I mean, it was a discussion that you and I had about doing a podcast with the message about civil defense.
Yeah, I remember that. And civil defense is something that our country got away from. And we need to go back to it because it's a critical part of our national security.
Yes, it is. And the concept that you developed in your book, the Civil Defense book, which I highly recommend to everybody. I've got two copies and they're both marked up pretty well. It suggests that it's a grassroots program that should be developed at the local level.
Yeah, and that is correct. So the federal government cannot prepare communities and individuals. That has to be at the individual and the community level. And ultimately, when civil defense first came into play, everybody in America understood that we were under an imminent threat. At the time, the imminent threat being, possible nuclear war. And when the Berlin Wall fell and the Cold War kind of ended, we kind of got an attitude in America that the world was safer. But then as we found, several years later, and particularly with 9/11 and a lot of things that have happened, since the Cold War, air quote, ended, we found that we live in a very, very dangerous world. And in some respects, maybe even more dangerous than it was before, because we have a lot of actors out there that want to harm the United States. So in addition to the usual suspects, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, we've got both, foreign terrorists, and we've got domestic terrorists, who have attacked us. And we also have been attacked by Russia and China specifically. And Iran and North Korea have capabilities, cyber capabilities now. So when we kind of look at our national security situation now, as opposed to in, the 60s and 70s, I don't really see us as being much safer, nowadays.
And I don't either. My analysis, which brought me to your book, while I was putting my ideas together and I was trying to figure out what was available to the average American for their protection during very serious disasters, because I had access to a secret facility up in the Virginia mountains because I was part of the continuity of operations team for ICE. So I had my golden ticket. But when my new wife asked, well, what about me? That created a whole new way of thinking because I was not used to thinking as a married man, but as a single man. And so that created a new dynamic, and I had to find out, well, what is available? And this is the path that, you know, led me to you and to this show and where we're going today.
Yeah, and, being able to get information out to people is critical because, as we've seen, and FEMA is one of my favorite agencies. I do love FEMA, but FEMA is not going to prepare your family or is not going to prepare your community. You know, you can't have top-down emergency preparedness. It has to be bottom-up. It has to be grassroots. And so what you're doing, Preston, is commendable, getting the word out, and your work with the Secure the Grid Coalition. So, you're actually a great example of somebody who sees a problem and works to fix it. So, you know, working on the civil defense end and also working on a national scale to help secure the grid, we don't have to be powerless. Preston and I are regular dudes. You know, we are not anything special, I assure you. We're just regular family people who love our country, who've taken an oath, and who are attempting to protect our country. And if you are the same way, if you're a man or a woman or a child who loves your country and wants to do something, you can take action. You can make a difference. And Preston, you're just a great shining example of that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I look up to you as my example. And your work that you have done over the last couple of years about the power grid and the fallacy of the projection of these various organizations that are in charge of overseeing the power grid has been, like I said in the intro, stellar, because you have done the Lord's work here, because nobody else has dug as deep into this stuff and revealed so much as you have. Matter of fact, you've taken the personal responsibility of suing to get information and to expose what's going on. Can you give us a brief update on what's going on with your lawsuit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, here again is an example. So I'm a regular citizen and I am suing the federal government to secure the grid. It essentially is what it is. So the issue behind it was that in the regulatory scheme, which Preston, you and I have talked about before on previous shows, but we'll go over it again, at least briefly here so people understand it. The regulatory scheme for the electric grid was actually lobbied for by the electric utility industry. And that's a huge problem because the regulatory scheme is what the electric utility industry wanted, not what the country needed. So it's mind-numbingly complex. One of the things that they were able to do is in the regulatory scheme is cover up the names of violators of critical infrastructure protection standards. And so what that means is the company that you get electricity from that you're paying an electric bill to every month, if they violate cybersecurity or physical security or critical infrastructure security standards, you do not have the right to know that. You do not have the right to know that the company that you pay, that your family depends on for electricity, is a repeat violator of mandatory standards. So that's a huge problem because not only do you not have the right to know that, but the state public utility commissions don't have visibility on this, and even the federal Congress does not have visibility on this. So nobody knows who these violators are, who the repeat violators are, and whether this regulatory regime is even working. So I filed a series of Freedom of Information Act requests with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to get the names of the violators. and was denied, and subsequently, after a long battle, ended up filing a lawsuit, which is presently in the federal district court for D.C. Under FOIA to force the federal government to release these names to the public. And that's presently going on. It's been, I filed it about a year and a half ago, and it will be going on for, some months longer. It is a major battle. The entire electric utility industry and all their lobbying groups and their army of attorneys have arrayed against me and have been fighting, the FOIA requests, and will be assisting the federal government in fighting me on the FOIA request in court. So, it's one dude against the entire industry. but basically, this is on behalf of the public, because we do have the right to know if the regulatory scheme that is allegedly protecting the electric grid is working. And right now, we do not have the information. Congress doesn't have the information, and the states don't have the information to even see if it's working. But of course, as we'll discuss, there is ample evidence that it is not working. Many examples of this, but we've uncovered many, many examples of how the regulatory system is failing to protect our electric grid.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that they have designed their own compliance schedule or their own compliance rules, and nobody else has that ability. Nobody but right. them. And yeah. So it's everything is bass ackwards.
Yeah. And not only did they design it, but they also were able to, in this regulatory scheme, so the federal government doesn't even directly regulate the electric grid at all. It's completely indirect and mind-numbingly complex, as I said. So this is probably a good time to kind of talk about what the regulatory scheme is, because everybody listening, you're going to be scratching your heads and saying, this has got to be a government operation because it is so complex. So here's the way this works. So there are essentially three parts of the electric grid. You have generation, and that's where, the electricity is generated at power plants, whether they're nuclear plants, coal plants, wind farms, solar farms, hydroelectric plants. So you have generation, so where the electricity is generated, and then it gets stepped up by extra high voltage transformer, and it goes into the transmission system. And the transmission system transmits the energy over long distances. So when you see those huge transmission electric lines, that's what that is. That's the transmission system. Then it goes to another extra high voltage transformer that steps it down, and then it goes to the distribution system. And this is where the electricity goes from the street, from the electric pole on the street into your house. That's the distribution part. Okay. So now, of those three components, the federal government only has authority and a minor amount of authority over the transmission system. It's called the bulk power system. The federal government does not generally regulate the generation other than nuclear power plants and some exceptions. But the generation is largely regulated by states. And then the distribution system is also regulated by the state public utility commissions. So in the whole regulatory scheme, there are over 60 different public sector and private sector regulators. There's not one regulator of the electric grid. There isn't like one go-to agency that's in charge of security of the electric grid. You have 60 different agencies, 50 state public utility commissions. Then you have the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is the federal government's entity that regulates the transmission piece, the bulk power system, and they only do that indirectly. What got created in this regulatory scheme is a private corporation, which is known as the Electric Reliability Organization in the law. And the Electric Reliability Organization presently is the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC. So when we're talking about things, you'll hear me and Preston talk all the time about FERC and NERC. So FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. That's the federal government agency. NERC is the private sector entity that FERC has to go through in order to basically get to the bulk power system in terms of enforcing critical infrastructure protection standards. So NERC, this private entity, is funded by the electric utility industry. So they get their money from assessments of all of the utility companies. So that's where, you know, that's how they're paid for by the utility companies, which means ultimately you're paying for it through your electric bill. And the one of the things that is a real head scratcher is, so who writes these regulations? Who writes these mandatory, you know, either critical infrastructure protection regulations or these mandatory reliability regulations? And they're called standards, not regulations. So mandatory standards. And they are written by the electric utility industry. So NERC, with the electric utility industry, will come up with these standards, which then FERC, the federal government, has to approve. And then NERC is the one that enforces these standards. And then, if they issue, let's say they find a violation of one of the standards in some utility company somewhere, and they issue a notice of penalty, then ultimately that notice of penalty has to be approved by FERC. But the actual regulation is done largely by this private sector corporation. Now, and believe me, it's much more complicated than that. I've provided a really, really kind of simplified version of this really complex structure. So in this whole thing, you know, we ended up with a system where the public and Congress and the public utility commissions, the states, don't have a right to know who the violators are. So, you know, if they do find violations, and what we found over time too, is there are real questions about whether NERC is even enforcing these standards. You know, the number of notices of penalties has dropped dramatically over the years, and it could be that every electric utility company out there are all doing the right thing. That's what the industry would like us to believe, and therefore there are no, you know, violations to be found. Well, that doesn't really make a lot of sense when you read the news and you see that, like, for example, PG&E had violations of its vegetation management, obligations, which there is a mandatory standard for vegetation management, and caused wildfires. And in one case, the Camp Fire killed over 80 people. Hmm. And, you know, there's many other examples. I mean, we'll be talking about solar winds, and we'll be talking about the Chinese transformers and the supply chain cybersecurity. But, you know, we've got many, many examples of how this regulatory scheme is not working and how the grid is still vulnerable to all of these threats, you know, a decade after this regulatory regime was put into place.
Yes. And this, I guess, is a good segue into your interview with Frank Gaffney on his show and your last blog post dated January 30th, talking about large power transformers are the backbone of our electric grid and what is going on with that, which is horrifying from those of us who are on the inside and know what's going on. So let's scare our listeners for a little bit and reveal the horror that is going on right now.
Yeah, and this and if you're hearing this for the first time, I implore you to do something about this because we need your help. We've got to get this fixed. So what we have discovered is, now I was just talking about kind of how the system works, and one of the main components, the backbone of this system of our electric grid, are these high voltage transformers. So these high voltage transformers generally are not made in the United States anymore. We import the vast majority of them, and we used to import them from Switzerland, Germany, and South Korea. But recently, we've been importing a lot of these from China. So since 2006, we have imported 300 of these transformers from China, at least 200 of which we know are attached to the electric grid. The other ones also might be, or they're attached to other critical infrastructures. Now, these transformers are huge pieces of equipment. So if you ever, you know, drive down the road and you see the chain link fence and all of those, you know, gray boxes with all of the, you know, high voltage electric lines going into it, that's one of those transformers that we're talking about. So in normal times, to replace one of those, so if one of those transformers failed and you had to replace it, it would take about a year to 18 months to get that sourced, manufactured, imported, and installed. It's a very, very long lead time to get this done. And that's just with one. So as you can imagine...
Excuse me, Mike. They're not all the same wattage. They're all pretty much specially designed for that spot where they're going, right?
Correct. They're site-specific, which makes it difficult. You can't really have a whole lot of spares because each one of these transformers is site-specific and they're all different. So it's not like they're all the same and, you know, we could just have a stockyard somewhere with a whole bunch of these. It just doesn't work that way. So if one of these transformers fails, it takes a long time to replace it. Now, if only one transformer fails, the utilities can route power around that and they can deal with that. And from time to time, they do fail. A lot of these transformers are very, very old. And so, you know, they do occasionally have to be replaced. However, if you lose several of these, you can have a blackout for a long period of time over a wide area. And if you take out some key transformers, there was a physical attack in Metcalf, California, against one of these transformers that was also owned by PG&E. And the Metcalf attack, you know, most of us in the grid security realm know about this. But for those who don't, the transformer was attacked by several assailants with high-powered rifles who knew exactly what they were doing. They cut the alarm wires and the camera wires to the site prior to the attack. And then with really, really well-aimed, they knew exactly what they were shooting at. So, you know, this wasn't a couple kids with a 22 out plinking. These were people with high-powered rifles, several of them, that took out this whole substation in Metcalf, California, with rifle fire. They've never been found. Nobody knows who did it. You know, there was a lot of worry at the time that happened that it could have been a dry run for a terrorist attack. So now imagine how complex and how coordinated the 9/11 attack was. So to be able to hijack several airplanes simultaneously and run them into buildings took quite a degree of sophistication to be able to achieve that. Now, to attack several high voltage transformers at once in a physical attack, and especially since most of these transformers, there's nobody there. There isn't a guard force protecting them. There's just a chain link fence, maybe a couple of cameras. So if you attack, after Metcalf, the federal government came out with a report that if you took out 9 key transformers in the United States, you could cause a protracted nationwide blackout. So these transformers are critical pieces of equipment. And we've just recently discovered that we've been importing these from China. So now why is that a problem? Well, we have a supply chain cybersecurity vulnerability right now in the United States. SolarWinds hack, which was caused by the Russians, put that into sharp relief. So that was kind of a software type of issue for those who aren't techies, and I'm not. But, you know, SolarWinds was a hack that basically came through the supply chain through software. Now, these transformers obviously are hardware. They're big machines. And we're importing these from China. Now, the People's Republic of China is an adversary that has been hacking our electric grid for over a decade. And we know that's been put out in federal reports. So now we're buying transformers from them And the possibility exists that some of these transformers might have backdoors. If the Chinese are already hacking our electric grid, why wouldn't they install backdoors into transformers to make that job much easier? So now fast forward to July of 2020, July of last year, the Wall Street Journal came out with a report about one of these transformers that was seized at the port of Houston by the federal government and brought to Sandia National Laboratory. Now, remember, these transformers are multi-million dollar pieces of equipment. So that's not something that's going to be taken lightly. Somebody bought this thing. Actually, it was WAPA, which supplies power to Denver, among other, places up in Colorado. And this transformer was bound for the electric grid up in Denver. It got seized and taken to a national laboratory. And since that time, we haven't heard a peep. We've heard absolutely nothing. And Preston and I have a colleague, Joe Weiss, who's a cybersecurity expert and internationally renowned cybersecurity expert. And it is his belief that this transformer was seized because it contained things that were not supposed to be in there. And so that was one transformer. And as I said, we have imported since 2006, we've imported 300 of these transformers from China, 200 of which right now, as we speak, are connected to our electric grid. So that is a very scary thought. Right now, the Russians and the Chinese, and we know the Russians shut down the electric grid in the Ukraine. And we know from Stuxnet that a cyber attack can destroy equipment. So, the real fear right now is that Russia and China have the capability to actually turn off our electric grid or destroy equipment on our electric grid, such as these transformers, which would, throw the United States into a long-term protracted blackout. And if that happened, as I'm sure, your listeners know, in a national scale long-term blackout, millions of people would die. Everything that we need to exist, it only exists because of the electric grid. The electric grid is the life support system that we are plugged into. So if the electric grid goes, food goes, water goes, sewage systems go, communications goes, transportation, fuel, medical, all of our critical infrastructures, all 16 critical infrastructures depend on the electric grid. As well as our military bases. Most of our military bases presently depend on the civilian electric grid. So you can just imagine in a long-term, large-scale blackout what America would look like. And, the human toll in terms of death and suffering is just unimaginable. And the risk of this cannot be tolerated. We as citizens cannot allow these risks to continue to go unchecked.
Yes, you're right. And you've done a fantastic job of highlighting the issues here and giving us a lot of things to think about. And I really appreciate you being on the show and giving us this insight that you are very capable of relating. And this is a serious, serious threat. We've talked about it on multiple shows, and this is something that too few people pay attention to. And it's this head in the sand, normalcy bias, that people just can't imagine a world that's different than what we have right now. But right, we are being attacked right now. We're in a fifth generation warfare that is going on. Those of you go and listen to episode 92 and you'll find out more about it. But this is a very serious threat. We are under attack right now. We have been for a while now. And this is not going to stop. It's going to continue. And our enemy is determined to take us down because they want what we've got.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, as bad as this is, it is something that we as citizens can do something about. So, you know, we can talk, let's talk a little bit about like the executive orders and then maybe what people can do. If they're listening to this and you're just a regular person, like, you know, me and Preston, you know, what is it? What can I do? I think that's an important question we want to answer. So we're talking about supply chain cybersecurity. So in May of last year, the president issued an executive order on supply chain cybersecurity. Now, it was better than what we had, which was nothing, but it only addressed future acquisitions of equipment into the bulk power system that is manufactured or provided by a foreign adversary. So now, what is a foreign adversary? Well, obviously, we know, you know, China and Russia are foreign adversaries. They're trying to hack us all the time. So this executive order was going to stop the imports of equipment or software into the electric grid that, you know, was made or provided by foreign adversaries. So fast forward to January 20th of this year, and President Biden issued a very wide-ranging executive order. And the executive order actually is called, and this is kind of interesting, Executive Order on Protecting Public Health and the Environment and Restoring Science to Tackle the Climate Crisis. So that's what the executive order, the title was. It's 7 pages long, but there was one paragraph buried in there that suspended the executive order from May of 2020, which was called Securing the United States Bulk Power System. So it suspended that order for 90 days. And then directed the Secretary of Energy and the Director of OMB, which is the Office of Management and Budget, to jointly consider whether to recommend a replacement to that order be issued. This is our opportunity right here. So, you know, we were very, very concerned that the executive order on securing the bulk power system was suspended, as you can imagine, because, you know, we've got presently cyber attacks going on, supply chain cybersecurity issues in the electric grid. So initially we were very, very concerned. Yesterday, the Secure the Grid Coalition, which is the organization that Preston and I belong to, working to protect the bulk power system, sent a letter to the secretary. Actually, she's the nominee for the Secretary of Energy. We expect she's going to be confirmed. But we just sent a letter to her with suggestions on how the May executive order on securing the bulk power system can be improved and made better. So what our hope is, and this is where everybody listening can help, our hope is that the new Secretary of Energy and the new Director of the Office of Management and Budget will improve the cybersecurity, a supply chain cybersecurity executive order, so that it also covers equipment that exists on the grid. So the old executive order would not have addressed the 300 Chinese transformers that we had already imported. It was only going to address future acquisitions. What we need, and right now, there is no requirement whatsoever that anybody look at the 300 Chinese transformers that we have imported, you know, since 2006. There's nothing. So if some electric company bought one of these, electric utility bought one of these Chinese transformers and they've got it hooked up to the grid, there's nobody that's going to come around and tell them they got to look at it. There's nobody that, you know, there's no regulation that they have to. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, you know, our grid remains vulnerable as long as we don't take a look at these things to make sure that they're safe and that they don't have back doors installed, and then stop importing, future equipment from adversaries. Yes. And so what our opportunity is right now is, you know, we've just sent a letter, which is available on my website, which is michaelmabee.info. That's M-A-B-E-E, michaelmabee.info, or on securethegrid.com, the Secure the Grid Coalition website. And take that letter, and you can either print it up or you can write your own letter and send it to your congressional representative and send it to your senator and ask them, what are you doing to protect my family and my community from these threats to the electric grid?
That's great.
Is exactly. And if enough people did that, I mean, out of everybody listening, if a few of you take it on yourself to get with your elected representative and your senators and send them a letter, and it can be as simple as you write a paragraph, what are you doing to protect my family and my community against all these threats to the electric grid, and then attach the letter that the Secure the Grid Coalition wrote and send that in, that would do a lot. We have got to get Congress to enact legislation to protect the grid, and we've got to get our current administration to issue a strong executive order protecting the entire electric grid, not just the bulk power system, but the generation and the transmission as well, generation, yes, transmission and distribution as well. So this is our opportunity. We need to make the government accountable for protecting us. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, I can't do anything because I'm just a little person, Preston and I are little people. We're just like you. We're regular, yep, people. Both of us spent our careers in the military and in civil service. You know, we were never in it for the money. We were always in it just to serve the country. You know, if that describes you, if you're just a regular working person trying to provide for their family and you're concerned about this, you do have the power to help us make a change.
That's true. That's true. And I will put a link in the show notes, so you can find that on the app that you're listening to this to, or you can go to civildefenseradio.com for this show under podcasts, and you will find that link as well. So, Michael, unfortunately, that has to be the last word. So, civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com, and check out our regular postings on Facebook, on MeWe, and on Telegram. And Telegram is Civil Defense Radio Channel, and YouTube is Civil Defense Radio Channel, and MeWe, it's just Civil Defense Radio. So check us out there. And I wish to thank Michael Mabee again for being on the show, and I wish to thank you, our friends out there who are listening to us on a regular basis, and our international listeners as well. You guys are important to us as well. So I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.